Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, everybody, and what's not terrible, Internet? I am Danielle Riendo.
There you go.
I'm
You've
here.
Got your own catchphrase. You nailed it.
I did it. Well, I felt like, you know, Austin's not here today because he's actually at an event. So I felt like I can't say what's good, Internet. That's his thing. You know, I can't steal from Austin.
That would stress me out, actually. Yeah. Like, the thought of having to, like, he's got a catchphrase, and then if someone else has to co-host, do you have to have a catchphrase? Is that part of the template of the podcast?
I feel like maybe it is. Because we have such a, it's like a ritual. Like, there's a count, and there's a what's good, Internet, but now there's also a what's not terrible, Internet. So,
I'm gonna have to work on my own. I'm gonna start thinking about it.
Yeah, this took weeks. This was weeks of preparation.
Workshopping involved, too.
Exactly. Yeah, like, workshopping involved. I'm Danielle Riendo. I am joined by a very special co-host today. This is Nico from the Internet.
Yes. Hi, I'm a denizen of the Internet. People might know me on Twitter as Apple Cider Witch. I've also written for Pace Games and Kotaku. And us.
Nico wrote some awesome fan fiction at the end of last year.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
For the Waypoint High event, it was a really good time. It was great getting to write about cool video game ladies, you know, being teens.
We're also joined by Patrick Klepek, senior reporter here at Waypoint. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing good. I'm here.
How was your weekend? What did you do? Do anything fun? Do anything cool?
You know, you're always discovering things as a father. You're discovering when your child is going to be terrible. When will it be terrible? We had our first long distance car ride, which I feel like, I think like long distance is like more than 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. And this was a 6-7 hour adventure. So you discover things like, you know, your kid wants to get out of his seat. But you can't take them out of their seat because it is literally against the law.
Yeah.
So they just scream, and your wife and you sit there, and you stare forward, and you wonder how you got to this place, what choices led you to this moment, and you look over her, and there are tears streaming down her face, and you feel terrible, but then you feel thankful that she will not remember any of this, or maybe she will, and this will come up in therapy at some point. But like, I remember at 5 months old, my parents did not console me, and
they made me sit in a seat for seven hours.
They made me sit in a seat for 6 hours. It was otherwise pretty fine. She was fussy for a little while, but otherwise we survived to head to Minnesota to visit with some family and largely get away from video games. I brought with my PlayStation VR, thinking that some folks might want to mess with that, but there were too many kids where we went, and they were destructive, so we decided not bring out the VR.
Yep, probably
in
a smart
hopes
choice
of not destroying it.
Yeah.
That's very, very wise. I didn't play many games this weekend. Did you play anything, Nico? Or anything cool happening?
I've been in New York City, so I've actually been away from the video games because I don't have any of my consoles or my PC with me. I've just been soaking in the New York City culture and the food. And that's, you know, I mean, like, that's a grand video game in and of itself, is how much can I eat, physically consume in the, like, 4 days that I'm here in New York City?
That's a good plan. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of good food here.
Oh, absolutely. Just the top. Best in the world. Like,
definitely.
Yeah. It's nice coming back to the East Coast. It's nice to have a proper, decent slice of pizza, a decent hot dog, and decent bagels again versus the Midwest. So.
I understand. Well, you're from not too far from where Patrick is.
Oh, no, yeah.
As I understand.
I'm from the Milwaukee area, but I'm a transplant from the East Coast, so it's been a little bit of a transition to come from some of the best pizza and hot dogs in the world to whatever they like to serve in Chicago. So, you know.
Wow, I'm just not going to touch that one.
I don't know.
That's what we call bait. And I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to take it. You know?
That's wise.
It's already so incendiary on the internet. It has been a rough weekend for a lot of people.
I am not
going to drag myself into another needless fight. I'm not going to do it. So I'm just going to let you. You're allowed to have your opinions. I respect your opinions. And I will allow other people to judge you for those opinions. And I will leave it alone.
You know, that's fair.
I didn't mean to get so political this early in the morning about pizza. You know, I think we should all enjoy pizza how we want. That's what our great country is about.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It's about
pizza the way you want.
Yeah, pizza the way you want.
That's the American way is pizza your way. The Burger King way, your way. I don't know. Everybody's way.
Whatever toppings, whatever crust, you know, thickness.
No pineapple, though. I'm not willing to defend that.
No pineapple.
Those people with their Hawaiian pizzas with their pineapple, get out of here.
No.
And if you're Hawaiian, it's fine. But all you other people getting on this pineapple bandwagon, no pineapple on a pizza.
I can't deal with pineapple on a pizza. I'm glad we agree on something, you know.
We can find our compromise there is fuck pineapple on a pizza.
Reach across the aisle. With the pineapple hating.
That's so beautiful. I'm like, tears are coming from my eyes right now. Tears of beauty and strength and happiness over pizza unity. Good. It's good. It's a good thing, you know, when two people can agree on beautiful pizza.
When two pizzas can agree.
Two pizzas. We find standing away. In the night, you know, holding hands, holding crust. It's a beautiful time.
Yeah, you know, some people, you know, I'm sure some parents worry about having a conversation about the birds and the bees. I'm scared about having a conversation of deep dish versus thin crust pizza with my child. And I just don't know where she'll end up on that argument. And I'm worried. I'm going to give her propaganda. I'm going to brainwash her into the deep dish lifestyle. And I will not allow those thin crust insurgents to try and take this away from me.
Fighting words.
We just mended some fences, Patrick. We just mended some fences.
Burned them right down. I burned. Well,
what did you do this weekend, Danielle?
I slept a lot. I played a lot of Punch Club, but we talked about that last week on the podcast, so I won't go on and on about Punch Club. I watched my girlfriend play a ton of Yakuza.
Oh.
That's definitely a thing that I did. And I know, Patrick, that you're definitely enjoying this game. I watched you enjoy some of this game recently.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with the Yakuza games, other than they involve Yakuzas. Is that the plural of?
No, Yakuza is the plural. Yeah,
a gaggle of Yakuzas.
A gaggle of Yakuza. A murder of Yakuza.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I guess I didn't have a great sense of what that series even was, and then once it got, I don't know, what felt like seven games deep, it felt like, oh, maybe that's just a series that, you know, the ship sort of sailed for me, and I just wasn't really paying attention to it. I'm not sure what has sort of allowed for this moment where Yakuza 0. It just feels like the series is kind of having a moment here in the U.S. I think maybe it's partially because there's just not as much out right now. And so, you know, between like sort of Gravity Rush, Resident Evil 7, and Yakuza 0, those are like pretty different games. And so it's kind of giving Yakuza sort of an opportunity to sort of breathe and get some attention in a way that I feel like it hasn't had before. And also, I remember when Sega brought over the original Yakuza, like they got, you know, like some all-star cast, like they paid a ton of money to get like these like notable actors and actresses like Michael Madsen, I believe, and all these others to do work in Yakuza. And they pitched it as like serious Japanese crime drama. And that kind of was what always got stuck in my head about what the series was. And then over time, you know, what I realized was like, yeah, I guess there is sort of like a serious crime drama happening, but also like you can go and shut down a high school illegal panty ring and like all these other weird fucking things that are in this series, and sort of the absurdist humor, it's just ridiculous in a way that that part is what I found really interesting and fascinating. Like I just had a sequence early on where you introduced to, you know, there are two playable characters in Yakuza 0, and so you spent a couple hours with one, and now I just introduced the second, who runs a cabaret, like sort of, you know, there's a band and there are girls that hang out with sort of these wealthy Japanese businessmen that come in, and he's the manager of the club, and one of the guys gets a little touchy-feely with one of the girls, and the place has a no-touching rule. It's a respectable establishment for wealthy Japanese men to come and hang out with beautiful women. But the guy wants to get into a fight with the manager. And the manager, your character, he has a policy of the customer is king. And that means even though the man wants to fight him, he will not lay a finger on him and fight back. And so to teach you like some dodge mechanics, like you are – it says – I wish I had the photos, but it says like, remember, the customer is king. You are not allowed to fight this man. You must respect the customer even when they are wrong. And so you have to dodge him a couple of times, and there's all these elaborate cutscenes where he is unwilling to fight this man even though he has caused such a disruption for – and it's just – while he's doing that, he's instructing his band to play like music so he can get into the beat so he can dodge properly. It's just it's an absurd game in a way that I've really jives with my sense of humor, and it's also nice. I always appreciate getting a chance to sort of understand what people appreciate about a series that I just didn't know anything about. And so even though I don't play any other Yakuza games, I feel like by playing this one, at least I can kind of say, right, like, I get why people are so bananas for some of these games.
Yeah, I've just been really enjoying that tone, and also enjoying there was a piece on the site by Heidi Kemps a couple of days ago about how Yakuza 0 really captures a very, very specific time and place, and that's like bubble Japan, like economic bubble Japan of, you know, money just being everywhere, just flooding the streets, you know, these wealthy folks who are just like, you know, throwing cash at cab drivers and things like that, and this, you know, the style and the sort of, you know, culture of excess and pleasure, basically, that was the 80s in Japan, or at least in these sort of like nightclub districts in Osaka and Tokyo, which is really kind of fascinating to me. I love that when a game is like all about being somewhere, you know, sort of really feeling sort of the vibe of a place in time. That's a key gameplay, you know, goal for me.
Yeah, you feel like it kind of, I think it really helps with kind of the immersive aspect of, you're not just focusing on the gameplay, you're also like, oh, hey, I feel like I could really be here, I could be really seeing these things, and it kind of gives you more of a sense of depth versus like, yo, I'm just going around punching guys. No, I actually feel like this is a time and a place that I could be, and so you can get into that mindset real quickly. It's really cool.
It's pretty.
Yeah, I mean,
rad.
Even though it's absurdist and exaggerated, it also feels like it's capturing some flavor of the place and time and what it was like in Japan. You know, I'm sort of spitballing there, but I feel like when I'm playing, I'm like, I feel like I'm getting some sense of it, even if in the context of it is something absurd and wild.
Yeah.
it feels like it is capturing something very real, even if it's doing it through satire and comedy. And that's cool. I mean, like, you have a pager in the game.
Oh, man, that's a throwback.
143. Yeah. You know, that's what you had to always send over.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, I can imagine a bunch of Yakuza just texting each other
143.
Yeah, yeah.
143. Like, they love each other, bro.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's very beautiful.
Speaking of loving each other, bro. Nico, you are a huge Overwatch fan.
Yeah.
I know you are big into the Overwatch community. You're into the fan community. I was hoping you could give us, like, a missive from the Overwatch, you know, like letters in the field, the Overwatch field.
Oh, well, I mean, like, right now, what's going on in the Overwatch community, the Lunar New Year Festival is on, the event for Overwatch, along with all of the other Lunar New Year events that are happening in all the Blizzard games, because Blizzard has so many games that it can actually do, like, events across all their games. And so for Overwatch in particular, we're celebrating the Year of the Rooster, which is really cool. A bunch of characters got brand new skins. So people are having, like, a ton of fun, like, running around. Like, the thing that's kind of being talked about a lot in the community right now is that Anna has gotten a very scary looking mask that, you know, if you play Anna and she's a sniper healer character, and she will put people to sleep. And one of her highlight intros for the character is her, like, peering over your body and then, like, doing a shush motion to you.
Oh,
and now she has this, like, creepy smile mask on. which is like, I found that like so hilarious. But it actually is from Korean culture. It's part of like a big sort of traditional series of like drama that they do with masks, like drama and comedy and stuff like that. So it's actually been really cool to see kind of the cultural touches that are happening in Overwatch. Like Mei got a bunch of new skins, which everybody is super happy about because a lot of people were like really riled up that she got like a recolor for the Christmas event. D.Va also got a really cool new skin for her and her mech. She's dressed in a handbok, and her mech is all like decked out to look like a pelican, which is you know, a way of like carrying people around like on a litter. But her mech is her pelican, so she's like, it's all like decorated with like just cool like little doodads and stuff on it. But mostly it's just been like really cool sprays. They added a new map. Like a map mode, which is basically capture the flag, but it's called capture the rooster.
Perfect.
Yeah,
I always want to capture the rooster.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
that's
like
what I do.
Yeah,
in my life.
It's a lot of fun. For people that played a lot of like Unreal Tournament and stuff like that, like the capture the flag mode is like very popular for that sort of reason.
Have you been playing much of it? Are you enjoying it?
Yes and no, because I'm not a traditional FPS player, so it's been a little bit difficult for me because I'm just like, capture the flag, oh my gosh, I have like no touchstones for this other than like World of Warcraft PvP.
Sure.
So it needs some tweaking from a design standpoint because Overwatch maps are designed in such a way that they make fight engagement really clear and good for the 6v6 aspect. And that sort of thing. But for capture the flag, the maps are it's a lot smaller. So you kind of run the risk of people like just overwhelming you really quickly. And it's got some things changed with it. Like you don't have to get the enemy team to drop their flag before you can capture. So it's basically a race to like who can capture three flags first. So that's also a little different. And, right now, Symmetra is kind of the dominant hero for this map.
Interesting, because isn't she less? I am not an expert. This is me just, you know, reading Twitter for people who are really into Overwatch. But I always thought she was one of the least used characters.
She was, and then she got her like big update where she has like a floatable shield, and her beam and her sentries all have longer range. And so think of it this way. So the map is a lot smaller and the flag is in a confined area and the flag requires you to not be taking damage when you pick it up. So imagine running into a very tiny room and having all six beams just sort of melt you into a puddle as you're trying to capture the flag. And you can sort of imagine why Symmetra is very, very strong on this mode.
OP. Is that the term? OP? Am
yeah,
I doing it right?
OP?
Okay,
a little
good.
OP.
Good. A little OP. She's
yeah.
a tiny bit OP.
Yeah, tiny this. Bit OP. So that's kind of what's been going on with Overwatch. I mean, I've been having a lot of fun with all the new skins and things like that. I mean, everybody's hot for Zenyatta now.
Got hot. I know that was Zenhata. Was
Zenhata,
the thing
yeah.
Danica was talking about in chat. We were doing, you know. Oh, no. We've upset Patrick.
Yeah. It's like, no more robots. No more. No, I can't deal with it.
Well, we were thinking about it, and we all know that Bastion fucks. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
the
waypoint. You know,
yeah.
That's like right up there. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, pro Popplio, Bastion fucks. Like, those are our main points of action here at Waypoint. And so we were like, oh, Zenyatta may be who Bastion was fucking this whole time. Maybe that's what's going on. Now Zenyatta's feeling all hot.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I'm showing my true colors now.
Uh-huh,
like,
uh-huh.
That's what's going on. I know you're really into the fan aspect of this and the pairings aspect of this. So I don't know how you feel about this very in-depth theory that we definitely spent hours on.
I'm going to be a little conflicted here because while I do like to support the Waypoint, you know, fanfic crew 2017, you know, I like to support the theory that Zenyatta and Bastion could fuck. Like, I'm down with that.
Yeah.
But it seems like the pop...
What's going on?
We've broken Patrick.
I feel like I blacked out and I just woke up somewhere.
No.
What did I do last night?
Bastion.
The
did Bastion last night.
What did Bastion do last night?
Just drank too much motor oil. You know, it was a real scene. Like, you know.
Oh, my God. Okay, no, continue, yep. Please. No, continue.
So the popular pairing for Zenyatta is actually Zenyatta Genji, also known as Genyatta.
Genyatta.
Genyatta is the pairing name. Okay. And with the new update, I mean, that's just added more fuel to the Genyatta fire, as far as I'm seeing. I mean, like, everybody's all about that, like, hot masked robot on robot ninja action. So
that's pretty hot.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
they're both beautiful sort of robots, sort of AI, sort of cyborgs, you know, whatever you know you want to call them.
They have a lot in common.
Yeah, they do. They do. They have. I mean, like, Zenyatta is Genji's sort of a spiritual master in a lot of ways. I mean, you can kind of see this just writes itself, really.
It really
does.
Yeah. It truly does.
Yeah, really.
How do you feel in general? I have always wanted to ask these questions of an Overwatch fan leader. That's what I'm going to call you now.
Okay, cool.
An Overwatcher. How do you feel about less popular pairings? Do you get, like, mad, or are you kind of like, no, you know, everybody gets their say? Like, what's the most unpopular pairing that you think of?
Oh.
And are you kind of like, ugh?
I think there's always, for me, obviously I have my favorites. Right,
you can show your true colors here.
I mean, okay, so I'm gonna
we're
go.
For mercy all the way.
I know this, we're for mercy. That's the thing, is I gotta come in. I'm really for Symphera.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know what? Farrah's got two hands. One for Mercy, one for Symmetra.
That's right.
So, you know, she...
That's the name of the podcast. Right there. She's got two hands.
So they can be all holding hands, you know? Like,
that's where you're going with it. Okay.
Yeah.
I went to a different place.
Where? I am a very pure and virtuous woman. They're holding hands,
good,
walking in the park,
I'm
having
blessed
a nice day out. But yeah, any...
Put your hands where we can see them. Ladies, please.
Like, for me,
that's what a dad would say.
You're being dad is perfect. It's perfect.
For me, it's always, I can always be sold on whatever people give me kind of a justification for. If people can give me kind of like a really good sort of hook to it, I'll read the fanfic, I'll look at the fan art. Like, I love fan art of pairings that are not even really like my favorite, just because I feel like there's so many talented artists and writers in the Overwatch community that are just doing some really great stuff. So, I mean, if you want to do a rare pair, as it were, of whatever you find really cool and interesting, like, you know, if you put your heart into it, I'm like really down with it. And that kind of goes for all sorts of pairings in the Overwatch community. I mean, like, the Femme Slash in particular, everybody is with everybody. I'm totally digging it. Obviously, I do have my favorites. Yeah, like, I really wish that Symmetra and Farrah got more love, because I feel like they're really awesome, and I'm kind of really digging on, like, Sombra and Widowmaker. Also really, yeah, but
that's
also
pretty rad. Yeah.
Yeah, like, the, it's, well, technically it's called Talon OT3, because it's Reaper, Widowmaker, Sombra, so that's very spicy, very spicy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, but for me, as long as you have kind of like passion behind it, and it's not like something kind of like, you know, like, there's some definitely some things that I'm like, ah, man, it's a little weird. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But you know what? There's room for everybody in the Overwatch community. So
that is the beauty of it.
Yeah,
that is the beauty.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with what people want to ship for the most part, as long as it's like, you know, if you just give me a good reason and come up with something creative, like, I'll totally read it. I'll totally look at it. You know, it's just, you know, everybody's
inclusive. Allowed.
Yeah,
everybody's allowed into this beautiful club.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
If people are like me and extremely lost about what's happening right now, where would one start if they thought, like, I want, like, where is this stuff happening? Like, my gut response is like, I don't know, just go to Tumblr. But, like, that's not an answer. Like, if people are interested in the fan community, like, where would you recommend they start if they want to, like, see, you know, some of what you're talking about, where some of these conversations
are. Oh, okay. So I have a couple places that I like to go because I do like to keep up on this for, obviously, writing purposes and, you know, also my own morbid curiosity. It's just kind of so usually, like, Twitter, it's a little bit harder because it's more disparate. You know, people are kind of just having conversations amongst themselves and stuff like that. So, yeah, I would go to Tumblr. The thing that took me a really long time to get about Tumblr is that the tagging system is a bit busted, but that's how fandoms engage with Tumblr, is through the tagging system. Apparently, it's a thing where if you are into something, like, say you're into, you know, Simfera, that name, like that.
So you just put the hashtag.
You just put hashtag Simfera.
Yeah.
And you can see it as it updates and, you know, people are adding stuff to the tag. So that's a good place to start. And you start adding artists and writers to, you know, your following thing. Now, if you want to get the fanfic, you want to get into the fanfic, you're going to have to go to Archive of Our Own, which is a fanfic archive repository.
Ooh.
That's where all of the Overwatch fanfiction pretty much is. You can read most of the fan fiction without having a login because it's still limited membership. Like, you have to, like, sign up for it, and they'll send you, like, an invite if they have, like, slots open for it to actually be, like, a writer and to, like, you know, be able to write stuff on the site. But if somebody has made their fan fiction public, you can read it there. Again, also tagging. It's also available by tagging. And the tagging system for AO3 is actually very robust and allows people to kind of not only put what pairing is involved, but also any, like, content warnings or things of that nature. So, you know, if you just want to read about, you know, Symmetra and Farrah having a nice day, having a picnic,
holding hands, walking in the park,
you can read those kinds of fan fictions. If you want to read those kinds of fan fiction, that kind of fan fiction, you can just look for that kind of stuff, you know, versus
G-rated versus X-rated
and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's that's where I'm finding most of the fandom so far. Like Twitter, Tumblr, AO3, if you're really hardcore into fan fiction. But, like, for me, it's always been, if you find one person that's really into Overwatch.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Random stuff, they will give you a whole lot more people to, like, start following, and then it just sort of, like,
so this would be
snowballs.
A good intro for somebody. Yeah. Like, I'm going to look over here for Bastion, whatever it is. Like, whatever character you like, and then you just type it in, you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I never knew that about Bastion.
Yeah, I never knew, and then you can just sort of start to build a following and follow people that are doing the, like, kind of fan art and critical analysis. There is actually a lot of critical analysis and sort of meta posts about how people feel about the story elements, what they're kind of thinking about. Yeah. Like, I've definitely read a lot of, like, great stuff about how people think about, like, where Reaper's really from, or how they feel about, you know, Mercy's involvement with Overwatch and stuff like that. So it's not fan fiction. It's actually people sort of going, well, here's what we know about these characters, but what if it's like this, and speculation and stuff like that. So you can get a lot of that too. There's also some pretty decent posts on the Overwatch Reddit subreddit as well, which, you know, I'm always a little hesitant to talk about Reddit. But,
sometimes Reddit's
okay.
Yeah.
And the Overwatch subreddit, sometimes you can find some interesting speculation posts there as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think what's fascinating about Overwatch and sort of the community that's developed around it is that it seems, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of it's allowed it to flourish, and a lot of what has made it flourish is sort of the vagueness and the speculatory aspect, whereas we live in an age in which most sort of, like, mythology, canon, story is, like, so overwrought and detailed, and, like, everything is prepackaged for you, and there's a comic, and, like, and obviously Overwatch has some of this stuff, but it seems like a lot of what Blizzard has kind of allowed their community to define the terms of, like, what's happening, and then working within that and in reaction to it, as opposed to, here's the Bible, here's how things are, and that's just the way it is, which is, it just seems like that's how a lot of fiction these days is developed. And it seems like that probably has a lot to do with why that community has been, you know, so mm-hmm. widespread.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. It's interesting because Blizzard does have a really long history of providing really intense lore and sort of interconnected stories for their properties. But Overwatch at its heart is a first-person shooter, so they haven't had a place to really stick that story in. So we're getting it in little, like, drips and drabs and trickles, and a lot of it's not filled in. So, yeah, it really does give fans that opportunity to, you know, color in the lines, as it were, to this very compelling story that has just enough framework, just enough characterization for people to really kind of sink their hooks into.
Yeah, that's the thing that's always been most interesting to me about Overwatch. Even though I played the game and enjoyed it, and the reason why I put it in my sort of top 10 list last year was just this sort of just beautiful, fascinating, inclusive community of people who love this thing and love these characters, and it's been really fun to see it grow.
Yeah,
I think, personally.
I never really had gotten into a fandom before. Like for a lot of years, I was just like, I don't know how to engage with this. Sure. I don't watch TV shows or play video games in such a way that, like, kind of lends me to getting into this stuff. And then Overwatch happened, and then my entire life changed. I started writing fan fiction. I started doing fan art.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, like, drug.
It just changed my life. Just.
It was either, like, the best thing that happened to you or the worst thing that happened to you.
Only time will tell.
Depends on the day. A little bit of both. A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Also, like, fandoms are intimidating. Like, I feel like there are probably a fair number of people that, like, once a fandom develops, like, I could see it being difficult for someone that gets trying to get into it now. Like, finding your way in is a lot more difficult than when, you know, you were part of Overwatch at the beginning and you were part of defining what the fandom even was, as opposed to now when cliques and groups and ideas have already formed. And certainly we see a lot of that stuff sort of pan out, mm-hmm. you know, when different changes happen to characters and new story elements are introduced. Like, you see a lot of that stuff clash in a way that it can maybe make it intimidating to even become a part of that community, given that it's already so defined.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, the whole thing with the Genji and the Mercy voice lines, that was a huge thing because for a lot of fans, it had already sort of been a very contentious point between, you know, the Genji Mercy people and the, you know, Mercy Pharah people, and what did this all mean, and are these two Valentine's Day lines an indication of, like, a relationship stuff, and, you know, why is Mercy falling in love with Genji? She's a doctor, she shouldn't do that, that's unethical, you know, and, and I'm just like, oh, that's the part of the fandom that I have a little bit more trouble sort of, like, engaging with, because, you know, on the other hand, it's like, I feel, you know, I'm 34 and I'm just like, okay, I do like the pretendy fun time, like, stories and the art and stuff, but sometimes I'm just like, you know what? I like to analyze this from a critical perspective because I'm a media critic and I'm a writer. But, you know, sometimes I gotta take that step back and realize that, like, a lot of people have agreed on certain fandom elements being now quote unquote true, and they're not true by the, you know, word of God, as it were, in the Blizzard game, you know, but it's, yeah, those elements I think are a little bit harder to deal with if you're just coming into fandom for the first time. And they definitely scared me when I first got into Overwatch, you know, like, I'm not going to get into a fight with somebody about, like, McCree or whatever, you know, like, it's just kind of got to take a step back.
Yeah. Healthy moderation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Things you enjoy. As
yeah.
Always.
You know, like, at the end of the day, it should all be about, you know, us all having fun and all enjoying the game. Yeah. So, you know.
Enjoying yourself. Mm-hmm. I like that. So, Nico, we're going to take a little dip, just a little dip into that question bucket. Since you're our special guest, would you like to pick a number between 1 and, oh, good Lord?
That's not a
like 107?
100 and
something like that.
Wow.
You got a lot of numbers.
Oh, okay. Wow.
There's
okay.
a lot of numbers
so,
here.
So I'm trying to think of what's a good number. I'm going to say 72.
I just stopped there as I was scrolling. This is beautiful.
Good.
We're on the same page today.
Oh, we really are. Okay. This comes in from Donovan. All right. Donovan from Eugene, Oregon here. I asked this question to Austin during his AMA on Reddit. I thought it could provide some interesting discussion here. Some of the largest stories in history have been rogue journalists leaking information for the benefit of the public. Watergate, NSA leaks, etc. But recent examples in the video game industry have been stories like the PS4 Pro or hidden Ubisoft trailers leaking through anonymous sources, often to the detriment of a larger company. These, in my opinion, are relatively trivial revelations in the larger scheme of things. Personally, I could wait a few weeks to learn about an announcement rather than have somebody else face serious disciplinary action, lose a job, etc. Maybe that's me being a bit too empathetic, but keeping a relationship with sources is a big part of journalism as a whole, and those relationships can be very easily hurt. My question is, when publishing information that could potentially lead to lost jobs, in what situation do you think it's acceptable to publish leaked information, and what is your personal method for determining if something is important enough to break trust and publish against an authority figure's wishes, especially if a certain story could hurt your publication's relationship with them? Thanks for the show. Becoming their go-to for gaming podcasts, Donovan. It's a heavy one.
That's a big question. Yeah. There's a lot in there. I mean, I think you know, one of my, as someone that has engaged in this over the years, well, one, like, I'm extremely protective of my sources. I pass on publishing the vast majority of information that I know or talk about because I work very specifically with my sources to vet what they feel comfortable sharing, what details of that, right? So maybe a story that I'll write won't include a lot of details that I'd like to include because those details might be incriminating. Yeah. So for example, with the PlayStation 4 Pro, when I broke that story, one of the sources I spoke with was aware of the code name for it, but asked me to not include it. I would have liked to have said that because just having those sorts of tiny details add color to a piece and give people a sense of sometimes what the company is thinking about something by naming a prototype that or giving a code name to something. But sometimes what companies will do is code names are given out as watermarking of information. So a code name may be given to one set of people in a meeting and a different code name is given to another set of people in a different meeting. And then if that code name comes up, that's a way of watermarking information and finding some way to plug a leak. So that I agreed with my source. Let's not include that because that I no story. Well, I won't say no story, but like in the most things I work with, like no story is worth someone losing their job or other things being in jeopardy. You know, often I'm not dealing with humanitarian crises, right? You know, I think things are different if maybe you were reporting on labor practices or things like that, and then things get a little different in terms of sort of what the ethical guidelines are and when you would choose to or not to publish information. But like, for example, the PlayStation 4 Pro story, which he cites as maybe something like, why couldn't you have just waited and let the company announce it? For me, I do think about that all the time. I don't just publish information to be anarchistic, to just publish to publish. I always try and think in terms of the public good. And for the PlayStation 4 Pro, my understanding was that the PlayStation 4 Pro's rollout was going to be timed with, you know, there was the PlayStation 4 Slim. There were price cuts that were happening. The existence of a machine coming in 2016 that was going to reshuffle how the PlayStation 4 existed has a direct impact on someone, or could have a direct impact on someone that wants to purchase that machine. Where the existence of the Pro may make you think, well, yeah, I was going to buy one today, but if there's this better one coming out, I'll just wait for the fall. And so I think that is worthy consumer information where they can make a better purchase by having that information. It may disrupt the marketing campaign of Sony and their rollout of this. But I think as a consumer, you are better off knowing that plan so that you can budget and make sort of expectations accordingly. And so I thought it was worthy to publish it, in addition to the fact that that's a major disruption in how consoles have been rolled out and sort of how hardware is thought of in terms of, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 year generational gaps. So all that kind of goes – I mean, I'm rambling at this point because I put a lot of thought into this.
That's
and so I don't
good.
Think that doesn't make me immune to criticism for stories that I publish. But I am very careful about that. I am – I have complicated feelings about just publishing X game is in development. I do think it's important to push back against sort of the culture of secrecy that the video game industry has where, you know, a big name sequel is in development. It's not a big deal for that to be known,
it's usually
right?
No,
like,
shit.
Look at film. Like, we know Marvel and DC's, like, comic slate for what feels like the next 10 years. It might actually be the next
really
10 years
is.
If you looked at it. Like, the idea that, like, they're going to make another Fallout is not a big deal, which is why I think Bethesda responded to they were very angry at Kotaku for I was not involved in these publications, but the leaking of a new Fallout game, and then I can't say this directly led to this, but you saw very quickly then in the last year Bethesda saying we're going to make another Elder Scrolls game. We're not sure when, we're not sure how it's all going to line up, but obviously we're going to make another Elder Scrolls game. And like, no shit, like, yes, you're going to make another Elder Scrolls game. And so I think often sometimes places like Kotaku would leak that information because it was ridiculous that you would have Ubisoft or Activision not just saying very early, like, of course we're making another Call of Duty or Assassin's Creed game, and it's coming out in November, because that's what they've always done. But then they put their, you know, their fingers in their ears and pretend like, la, 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 we haven't announced it, which means it's not happening.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's I'm sure the both of you may have thoughts on that as well, but that is sort of, as a reporter, sort of my long-winded take on how I approach stuff.
Yeah, like no,
that.
I'm going with what you said. Honestly, I came to writing not really as a reporter, but as a critic. So I've always been of the mindset of, yeah, learn, be thoughtful, think of the public good, first do no harm. A lot of medical principles, yes. Actually, kind of go into
you take the Hippocratic oath,
any ethical, you know, yeah, sort of decision making. So, yeah, the journalistic Hippocratic oath.
Yeah,
you
know,
like a good example of this. I've talked about this on a different podcast. I don't think I've talked about it on this podcast, but one of the earliest stories I broke over at 1UP years and years ago was that Corey Barlog, who was
God of War.
Yeah, he worked on God of War as a senior designer back when David Jaffe was in charge of that series. He left after God of War 2, and I had that information. I learned about it immediately after he put in his resignation, and my plan that I had worked out with my source was that I'll wait till he's about to leave or after he's left. Like, I felt pretty confident that I had that information early enough that I didn't need to immediately publish it. Unfortunately, I mentioned it around the office to some people that I was working on that story. Those people then went and contacted Sony.
Oh, no.
Sony confirmed it was true. And my understanding is that Corey Barlog was so upset about it that he left weeks earlier than his actual end date, because he was so upset that his teammates would have leaked that. And so that's an instance in which information backfired on me, because I had a very specific plan to be respectful of his process and him leaving. I didn't gain anything by leaking it 2 weeks early, right? Like, wasn't going to change any of those 2 weeks. I was allow him to leave his job and then also report on a major development in at the time was one of the biggest game series around. And that story got away from me, and you know, my source ended up getting like his cell phone scanned and almost got fired over it, all over things that were technically out of my control, but I, you know, told people about what I was reporting on, and I probably should have been a little more careful about that. And you know, that fortunately my source didn't lose their job, everything worked out fine for them, and I actually was able to it was funny, at E3 this past E3 I had a chance to interview Corey Barlog, and I actually formally apologized to him because I never had a chance to talk with him since it happened, because I knew he did not like me.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Sure.
And he had clearly forgotten me in the years since, but it was something that had always kind of weighed on me. So I actually apologized to him for how that happened, because it had deeply upset me and was not – I at least wanted to set the record straight that I planned to report what happened to him, but I did not plan to have it roll out the way it did, and that had proved really frustrating to me. So – yeah.
I know that we all always like joke about scoops and stuff like that, you know, hot scoops and things like that. But it's like, that feels like one of the really tenuous things about doing games reporting and sort of getting into the more journalistic aspects of games writing is, man, how do you deal with sources? How do you deal with like leaks and things like that? Because obviously they're telling you for some reason, but you know, what do you do with that information? How do you help or potentially harm people and things like that? So it's always kind of fascinating to kind of hear you talk about this, Patrick, because I know that you have quite a lot of experience under your belt in that regard. So
yeah, and you're also going to pick the next number, so that you know that's very okay. Important. Yes,
so
bestowing upon you this.
All right, so you win 72. Let's. So is the order the. The lower numbers are newer or the older numbers?
I think so, because it looks like question one here is here, I'm scrolling right up. Sorry, scroll. Can't use that word.
So I want to go old.
Okay.
So
oh, okay.
If 107 is, or 106, I guess, at this point. But I guess it's probably still 107. We'll go with the oldest one. If that's number, one, or if that's 107.
Yeah, number one, it seems to be pre-me. So I think these are, oh, these are old.
Okay.
Right. So this one comes in from Blake in Texas. Subject line, game movies why, with several question marks. Mm. Hey, duders, vicers, vice babies, two very nice guys. This is how it's addressed.
I like it. So, I like it.
Vice okay, babies gotcha. Is good.
No, I know that. That's how you always address me.
Yeah, it is. I'm like, hey, guys. Hey, Vice Babies. How you doing today? What's up? What are you working on today? With talk of a J.J. Abrams-associated Portal movie in the works, the Firewatch movie announced the upcoming Assassin's Creed film and World of Warcraft coming out earlier this year, what do you think Hollywood's obsession with video game movies is? With few exceptions, movies based on games have not exactly been huge successes. Yet we have seen year after year of games being announced as upcoming feature films. Many of them enter movie purgatory and never actually get made. But I was wondering what you thought of this trend and the reason for it. The reason for it, my friend, is money. It is a marketing opportunity. It is a way to sell things. That is the main reason why these movies get made. They're all made in like big franchise, typically in like big franchises. It's not, you know, it's not typically like Papers, Please, the movie. It's you know, something like Assassin's Creed. I guess Firewatch is the outlier here.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
typically it's a big marketing opportunity. I once watched all the Resident Evil movies at the time in like 2006. I watched like all four of them.
I'm looking forward to doing that. Those movies seem bad.
Oh, they're
bad.
So bad.
The first one was like an okay B-movie sort of thing. And then I watched a couple of clips of some recent ones and it's just like, It's man, they seem to really go off a cliff and have like zero budget at a certain point. But now I am a huge fan. I'm sure I mentioned this before, of just like at the point that you have six or seven installments, you've hooked me.
Yep.
Like I just have to know, how did you do this for so long? Like how did you possibly find a way to keep telling
stories?
Yeah, how
much blood did you just wring from this stone over, you know, and obviously Hollywood has like a much different sort of production ethic than some of, you know, the game industry. And so it's really interesting to see those things come together. I saw one of the Resident Evil movies in the theaters. It was the one that I think came out. I don't know Resident Evil very well, so correct me. It has the like big dude, like star.
Oh, that was the second one.
Nemesis.
And it was
Nemesis,
Tim from the L Word who was the Nemesis.
Yes.
Yes.
And I saw that in the theaters. I don't remember much of it, but apparently it was really good. I had a lot of like when I think that came out when I was still in college.
It was about 2004. I only know this.
I was in college.
Because again, I went through all of them at the time. Yeah. Like 2006 or 2007. Went through all of them
I had a lot of friends who were also gamers. And yeah, we were like, we're going to go see Resident Evil 2 in the theaters. It's going to be great. And, like just really, that's always been my thing is I try to watch a lot of video game movies because I think it's a really interesting way to see culture mutate between how
literally for Resident Evil.
Oh, literally mutate. Yeah, for sure.
Come on, Danielle.
Make the jump.
Come on, I'm not gonna let that one pass.
Just make the jump from how we view video games and how video games have been trying so hard lately to be cinematic, as we think of cinematic. So when they make that jump to the big screen, what gets lost in translation, what you can't do and can do with film versus what we can do with, you know, games and cutscenes and things like that. And I actually saw the Warcraft film three times. I saw it twice in theaters.
Whoa.
And also streamed it as well with a bunch of my friends. And that was actually really interesting because it was apparently made more for the Chinese language audience than the American audience, and that's where a lot of the funding came from. And really interesting to see that on the big screen, especially as someone who never played the like RTS games, because that's what it was based on, is the RTS games, not the MMO. And they got some things really right. Like, they got some things really, really right. Like, they had actual griffins that you can fly around on, which is more of a nod to the MMO than the RTS. But, like, some of the characterization was really cool, a lot of the special effects. But on the other hand, it's like, how good can you make orcs look in a movie and versus the video game? And, you know, it's always been a really interesting experience because you do have things like the Warcraft movie, which are pretty high fidelity. You know, the script's okay. But then you have things like the Mario Brothers movie, which is...
with that beautiful production design.
Oh, for
and
sure.
Zero logical sense put into literally any other portion.
Yeah,
of,
yeah, for serious.
Of like, making that movie.
Like, we're going to make all of the Koopas and the Koopalings actual, like, humans with just a lot of prosthetics.
Except
not
for,
your...
with one weird exception.
Yeah, one weird exception.
It's like, Yoshi was a dinosaur, but Bowser was that dude.
I mean, I think we're heading in a direction where video game movies and the video games that they're representing are starting to look more and more similar with, you know, the fidelity of, like, CGI and stuff that we can pull off now. You know, I think that's good. But on the other hand, it's like... I feel like a lot of times, yeah, the movie scripts are being written by people that don't necessarily have a familiarity with the source material.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And how do you condense a 60-hour game like Assassin's Creed into a 2-hour movie? And how does that work? You know, things like that. So there's all these practical considerations that haven't really been met yet, I think, in cinema.
I would love to see a really good movie made, and I don't think it's anywhere near impossible. I think it obviously just takes that. It takes a good writer, a good director, people who understand what's cool mm-hmm. about something, you know, what's cool visually about something. I feel like the visuals in a lot of these movies are actually pretty rad. And
yeah,
actually
they're pretty decent. Yeah.
Kind of what's going on. It's just the scripts often fall apart, and we're clearly not you know, made with the kind of love that maybe they needed.
I think the Portal movie in particular might do okay, especially sure. with J.J. Abrams. Although, man, if it's like a cube style send of sort of like, you know, like ridiculous, you know, traps of death,
be.
You know,
yeah.
like that sort of thing, that might be just funny.
It might be kind of cool. I will also say I have a soft spot for terrible movies that are terrible in a fun way.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
mom and I love to watch Doom with The Rock. Like, we just love, we'll sit down.
Oh, that first person sequence in that
movie. Oh, it's a thing of wonder. Oh
man.
It really is.
I thought that was impressive, though. At least they, like, kind of stuck to their guns on that. Oh, God.
Okay, this podcast has to end.
Oh, I can't go anywhere. From that is where we're going to end. That was perfect.
That's it.
That
we're
was
done.
Beautiful.
You're not allowed to finish
Nico,
that point.
You are,
you ruined it.
You're coming back many times. You've earned yourself a spot here on Waypoint Radio.
Gosh.
Oh, that was beautiful.
I'm so sad that we're not streaming right now because Patrick's face is
really classic.
Man.
Yeah, you know, they may not know it, but they can feel it.
Yeah, they know. Nico, where can people find you on the internet? Please, where can they find your awesome sticking to your guns jokes?
You can find all my puns and assorted terrible jokes on Twitter at Apple Cider Witch. You can also find me at my actual portfolio site, which is ciderandlemonade.com, or any of the various outlets that I write at. So, you know.
Sounds really good. Patrick, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter at Patrick Klubbeck.
Awesome. You can find me, if you ever want to find me, for the worst puns you'll ever try to stomach. I'm Danielle R.I. on Twitter. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. Of course, you can find all of our amazing, beautiful writing, our fan fiction, our writing, our reported pieces, everything at waypoint.vice.com, digitalpyramids.com, bazinga.zone, new.donk.city. That's our new one, so I'm always like getting the rhythm down for that one. We are Waypoint on Twitter, Waypoint Vice on Facebook and YouTube, I believe. And of course, thank you to Bowen for his wonderful track that he lets us use as our awesome, gorgeous, just mind-blowingly great intro and outro track that is Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. Thank you, everyone. We will be back on Friday with more beautiful Waypoint Radio. Until then, I'm going to say it. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.